know, we don't go to the beach here in New York because you can't do that without getting poisoned or driving out to Long Island. Or,
you know, you get stuck with a syringe.
Yeah.
That's like a, that's a New York jellyfish. That's
when you're going to fucking Orchard Beach, man, look out for that.
Or you get, you know, globbed up by Thomas Hayden Church, right?
That's also
that's
true.
The other thing you got to look out for.
So that's why we just put a bunch of sand in the studio. We're hanging out. We got our umbrella drinks.
Mm-hmm. I, you know, I refer to it as just, you know, our own personal litter box.
Oh, you're the one peeing in the sand?
Wait, you guys haven't been going?
Oh,
Chris Cabin.
I'm not talking to you because you deflated my beach ball. And I told you already I'm not talking to you about this.
Yeah, I belly flopped on that thing.
Yeah, that's not a euphemism, folks. He really did deflate an actual beach ball.
Oh, I thought
ball.
He jerked him off until he came.
No. That's what I thought people were thinking.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're here to introduce an episode of a little-known movie called Free Jack. Now, this movie stars one Emilio Estevez. From Mighty Ducks fame and Brat Pack fame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you hear about this? Did you hear about this?
I mean, this?
By the time this is coming out, it's like weeks old, but Goldberg just got arrested for petty theft.
Goldberg got arrested for petty theft? Get out of town.
Yeah. The wrestler?
No, the goalie, no, the Goldberg.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. I thought you were talking about the wrestler.
No.
I thought he pulled an OJ and just was like taking old dolls of him off the shelves.
Wait, I want my memorabilia.
Give me that belt back.
Maybe that's what, I didn't look up, I just saw the Twitter headline, but I...
Maybe he stole a bunch of DVDs and VHSs of Mighty Ducks. These are mine!
And whatever cameos on Nickelodeon shows he had or whatever the fuck. That guy... He was one of those things. He's not fat anymore. I remember that being a headline one time. Was like, Goldberg ain't fat.
What the fuck? You know, fuck him then.
Yeah,
rot in jail. Yeah.
I think Thudbutt is still obese though. So
well, you know that sometimes you can't.
Better be. You know, you need something to fall back on.
This movie also stars rock and roll sensation Mick Jagger.
Yeah, oh yeah.
He's the bad guy of this movie. Jonathan Banks is also a bad guy in this movie. Of Better Call Saul fame.
Mm-hmm.
Tony Hopkins.
Oh, of course. Tony.
Fuck, I totally forgot about that. Westworld's Tony Hopkins. Yeah, totally. Transformer The Last Night, Tony Hopkins. This is a movie where Emilio Estevez is a race car driver who, like a half a second before his demise in an auto wreck, he is what they call freejacked into the future. For some reason that I don't remember.
They like rich people, I think, go into their bodies.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's stupid.
Yeah. They take people who are dying from the past and just like recycle them. It's a good program, I think.
You'd fund it.
I would.
A President Sisko would put funding into that.
Definitely. I'd put all of the funding into that. You know, AIDS and cancer, take a back seat.
To the Free Jack program. We are going to continue our summer vacation. And if this is new to you, because like we said, this is not a main feed episode, enjoy us talking about Free Jack. You know, for something like this, you have to set your thing a little bit farther into the future. There's no way that this movie's possible in 2009 from a 1992 standpoint.
No, there's at least 100 years in the future.
By the way, the whole thing involves time travel and body snatching.
Bone
jacking, excuse me. It's not body snatching per se.
No, it is exactly body snatching. Let's just call it something cooler.
Did I say that the film is Free Jack, by the way?
Maybe.
If not, it is. It's Stephen Free Jack. I don't know.
Little theme episode here for no one.
It stars Emilio Estevez, other Hollywood luminaries such as Rene Russo, Sir Anthony Hopkins, and Sir Mick Jagger?
I don't know if he might actually
he's
be.
He's got to be.
Probably, right?
What do you mean he's got to be?
Why not at this point?
I think the Stones were a little too grungy for the Queen. I don't know how that goes.
Really?
They partied a little too hard, stayed out a little bit too late.
I heard that chick gets down, though.
What?
The Queen mom.
She gets nasty, you think?
She might. So we start in 1992 on some sort of racing circuit that's not Formula One, but is pretending to be that.
That's in New York. What is the racing scene in New York that I'm unaware of?
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, and no one in this room can because none of us watch it, but there might be a NASCAR track somewhere on Long Island. Am I wrong?
I think that's what the movie's trying to say. I don't know if that's
right. I thought there legitimately was one. I know there's one in like New Hampshire.
I'm sure there's one out by like in like Western New York.
Oh, the Free Jack Expressway. That's what you're talking about.
The Free Jack Expressway. Yeah, it connects onto the Matlock Expressway. So Emilio Estevez is this race car driver who kind of drives these Formula One looking funny car things because it's smaller than a Formula One car too. It's kind of like he's one step above like a funny car racer.
It's a race car. I mean, we can just say that. I mean, I don't think we know.
I couldn't tell you a goddamn thing about an actual race car. Well,
it is. It's a funny car because he's such a tiny man that they probably had to make it a little smaller.
Do you think
for
it's
him?
A Hot Wheel?
I think, you know, honestly, because the majority of my Emilio Estevez experience is either the Mighty Ducks movies where he's starring alongside a bunch of little kids or Men at Work where he's just next to his similarly heighted brother.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how terribly short he is.
He's on all sorts of apple carts in this movie because he's supposed to be like the dramatic lead, you know, and like intense and interesting and sexually attractive.
I mean, he's not a bad-looking dude. We get a little bedroom scene here at the beginning of this movie.
Are you saying you're sexually attractive to him?
I'm saying he's a sexually attractive guy. Of course. A 1990s Emilio Estevez, that's the height of his powers. Because he's still got the golden boy good looks from The Breakfast Club, and that voice is definitely the same octave and probably still is today.
And he gets that Martin Sheen paunch as he gets older. Like, that's something... That's a bug that never got his brother. His brother had other kinds of bugs to get, but not that one.
All sorts of bugs
enough
to get.
Enough coke and crack, and you don't have that. That eliminates that problem.
Yeah, there is zero possibility for a paunch on Charlie Sheen. So he's preparing for this race car race that he's going to...
And it's kind of like your
race car race.
This is kind of... It's your standard, you know... Something, this race isn't gonna go well thing because, like, you know, Rene Russo's trying on all sorts of dresses and she's like, when are we gonna get married? It's like, as soon as I win this race, baby, it's gonna be all different. It's like,
just this one last race, one more day till retirement.
And there's a great point here where Emilio Estevez asks her to, nibble his ear for luck. Like, it's like this little cute thing that they have together. Like, oh, you're going to go off and do something big where I'm going to nibble your ear for a little bit.
You know, and here's the thing about that Rene Russo's character in this movie. Like, okay, I'm not one for, like, you know, I walk by someone on the street or in the subway station and whatnot, and they're like totally, you know, two people just going to town on each other. And I'm like, you know, all right. But in this situation, they're outside this big race course. He could go up in flames in a matter of minutes and all he wants is a little good luck nibble and she is so disgusted by it.
Oh man, she's gonna feel really bad about herself in about 15 minutes when this doesn't shake out.
When not so much this movie, but him goes up in flames.
Movie kind of goes up in flames.
So at the same time that he's prepping at this racetrack and he's walking around meeting all these potential sponsors with his manager, I'm going to just call him Buster Poindexter, but it's the dude from
David
the New
Johansson.
York Dolls, David Johansson, Buster Poindexter for the rest of this episode.
He was also in Scrooge with Bill Murray and Car 54, Where Are You? Stay tuned.
Yeah, he kind of looks like Benicio del Toro if he was a nightmare.
Yeah, he's kind of a funhouse mirror, Benicio del Toro.
He is. And I mean, that's a bad situation.
It's a really bad situation. He also looks like, funny enough, if Benicio del Toro fucked Mick Jagger and one of them had a kid, which is very interesting.
And very probable.
Yeah. Because crosscut with this race prep scene is our friend Mick Jagger in 2009. Getting ready for some sort of experiment. We don't really know what's going on, but they're triangulating coordinates, blah, blah.
And they're in tanks. They're in, like, trenches. And, like, Isai Morales has one eye, and he's, like, doing, like, all sorts of supercomputer action. I'm like, this has to be 3007, right? Like, that's where we are right now because it's so far in the future.
But it has to be at least farther than, what is that, 18 years or whatever? Like... Come on, what is the fucking problem? Set it at least 50 years into the future. Because we were talking about this before we went on the air, but like this whole Free Jack thing that we're going to get into, this whole system, is predicated on the already existence of time travel. So we had to solve the time travel problem, and then someone came up with free jacking, or bone jacking, rather.
Right, yes.
Shortly after that, a month after that?
So the system basically is, in the year 2009, the horrible year of 2009, there's nothing but the mega, mega rich and like the dirt poor, and the mega rich decide that they need to live forever, and they can't, I don't know why, just take a poor person's body, but they need to take body from time travel where someone gets killed and they zap them from that time right when they're about to die to the present day 2009 so that they can bone jack them.
Right. So they put the consciousness of the dying person into this free jack.
Yes.
The free jack who have they recently bone jacked. We have now, these terms right.
Here's something I need to know. Now, is a free jack, is that a term just for anyone who is being donated to this process, or is that just one who escapes? So are they just known as jacks if they are in captivity?
Oh, that's a fancy looking jack you got there.
Very nice jack.
Free jacking is kind of like the unused computer game you get. You've got like your solitaire, your minesweeper, and then there's something called free jack that you never click on.
Hilariously Man. Enough, I was Googling it today, and there is a video game called Oh, really? Free Jack, and I think it's
not
related.
Is it based on the premise of?
No, I think it's like I think it's like a parkour game or something.
Sure, it is.
Let me tell you something. My father was at the height of Windows 3.1 and Windows 95. Also, I believe it carried over into. My father was obsessed with Free Cell.
Yeah,
is what you're thinking of. Tri-Peaks, and there was another one. Golf, I think, was another card game. All those random non-solitary games that I have no idea how to fucking play.
I love those games because you're always playing with fake people like Bill and Tom and like all these, like, it's like before the internet, so they just had to make you feel less alone.
Oh, yeah, totally. I never wanted to hang out with any of those guys, though.
Are they, like, in some of them, they have like a little cartoon person of yeah. Bill and Tom, and it's like, that guy's from the old west. And then this one, that guy kind of looks like Bogey. He must be good at cards.
Yeah, exactly. And then you were like, always playing with people from different time periods. Oh,
that
though.
Guy's Mick Jagger.
And there's that sassy little trollop over there named like Margaret or something.
Scarlet. Ooh. Or something. Yeah,
yeah. Oh, yeah, Scarlet. Scarlet. Yeah, oh.
Scarlet, the female card shark. So, yeah.
Well, so the process of free jacking doesn't right. stop there. I mean, it's Jagger and his crew of bone jackers are looking at footage of the day of Emilio's explosion death, and they like have to pinpoint like the they're using the footage to pinpoint how to get him out of this situation. So yes. That makes me think that you can only be bone jacked if you die on broadcasted footage of some sort or film.
Either that or, you know, like it's like Back to the Future. You never know where and when lightning's going to strike unless you do.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe if you flat out know, you know, it's well documented like when someone's going to die. Yeah. Maybe then you can kind of, you know, triangulate those coordinates somehow. It just so happens in this situation, for some reason, because that's the other question, right? Who is filming this? What is this, on ESPN4?
Maybe. Well, he was a car racer. They like car racers on TV.
Also, I mean, because the whole thing is like, you know,
racer?
Hey, cool.
Hey, cool, it's a car racer.
Oh, no, he got bone-jacked. I hate when my favorites get bone-jacked.
Good thing I'll never be bone-jacked because I'm physically unfit for bone-jacking.
Is it a thing where you have to, like, go up in flames and kind of a mysterious thing? Because, like, couldn't, like, Kennedy have gotten bone-jacked? Wouldn't that, like, destroy the space-time continuum?
Era, I've gotten bone-jacked.
It appears as if I've been bone-jacked.
He would have to be one of
the... Ah, no, I'm the Prince of Nigeria. This didn't work out well for me.
They didn't even have... They didn't have the money for the bone-jacking. It was all a ruse. Era, now I'm just living in a hut. But he would have been had to have been the... JFK was definitely bone-jacked. He would have been he had to have been like one of the first to have been bone-jacked.
Yeah, because he's the most famous one. Yeah.
Wait a second, though. Was Reagan a failed bone-jacking?
Probably.
Like Mick Jagger's like at the corner. It's like, now he's going to get out of this car at this particular time.
Oh, what's that? You canceled your order? Oh, well. He just gets shot. Someone canceled transactions.
I couldn't get him then. I got Megan a little older.
Yeah, exactly.
But what came back, you wouldn't want.
You know what sucks? The whole grave digging industry is destroyed in this era because just everyone's just bone jacking and bone jacking.
Well, no, because you can still rob, like, you know, the sickly and the you know, like Larry the Cable Guy, like a physically unfit for bone jacking. Right?
Yeah, that's true.
And they, know, but they probably don't have anything worth it. I think at that point you're hunting for time capsules and stuff.
Time cops? You looking for time cops? You think
time capsules? But. There really should be time cops in this to monitor all the bone jacking.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Because as we find out in this movie, like, it's kind of some shitty. I mean, well, that's the thing. I don't know. Anthony Hopkins kind of does go through all the proper channels to bone jack Emilio Estevez, right?
He dots his I's and crosses his T's.
Well, that's what's kind of ridiculous about this. Like, you know, bill of sale, man. Where's Hopkins has to have a receipt of some kind.
And I mean, I'll get into it right now. I actually see nothing morally wrong with bone jacking.
Right. Okay. Let's have this conversation before we get into the rest of the movie. Because honestly, it's kind of just a bunch of car chases and Emilio Estevez looking and not sounding tough. But so the ethics behind bone jacking, is everyone in this room totally fine with it?
Well,
you're going to be dead anyway. If the stipulation of bone jacking is you're going to be fucking blown to smithereens. Mm. There's no point. You're definitely dead on impact. Fuck it. Like, if there's going to be nothing left, fuck it.
I think I'd be better with bone jacking if I was the bone jacker than the bone jackee.
Oh, right. So if it's in service to you, getting your consciousness put in Emilio Estevez.
Well, I didn't say that one, but
or Larry the Cable Guy, or whoever you pick.
Hey, cool. I would, like, think about this. What if every serial killer's victim gets bone jacked? Like, the guy's about to put the knife in, and then just like, ah, shit, he got bone jacked. That guy, I would be happy to not get raped and murdered and fleshed and skinned. Then just get bone jacked, and then they lobotomize you really quick. They put you out. They put you under.
Well, when you put it that way, I am for bone jacking.
However, the reason why there's a big hole in your thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like, what serial killer is publicly murdering someone?
Yeah. I guess
so then, if you're bone jacking all of these people who are about to be killed by Jason Voorhees in the middle of the woods or whatever, they're just going to be people that are gone missing. Now, that doesn't solve a problem.
But that's the real question. It's like, if they go missing, but if they find like a den, like, let's say, you know, they dig up Dahmer's basement and they find a bunch of people, they do the autopsies.
The carbon dating.
Yeah. The corpse carbon dating. Well, like the time of death, you know, like if an autopsy comes with the time of death, can that person then be bone jacked? And if so, that opens up almost all of humanity to bone jacking.
Yeah, except, see, now we're getting into all sorts of time travel wormholes here. And now it's kind of like Looper. You need to start communicating with the future to let them know, hey, man, we're going to dig up this thing. So feel free to clear out this basement. Maybe, you know, a plane's going to crash. That's like 50 for one right there. Yeah.
But I was thinking about this when I was watching this movie, is it would be great if they had like a Looper like scenario like that. But they had like maybe like their own like test facility, like a crash test dummy facility where they just keep on ramming people into the wall to blow up and then just transport them for the bone jacking. You know, they get a couple of like real lemons of cars and just ram against walls and just a bone jacking factory.
I think it's safe to say we're all in one way or another kind of okay with what's happening in this movie.
Absolutely.
So Emilio gets bone jacked. This car goes flying into a wall hilariously and just bursts into flames. He's shot forward into 2009 into one of Mick Jagger's tanks. And they're going to take him to the facility and trade his consciousness with a mysterious, you know, person who's paid for it, which I totally spoiled like 28 minutes ago. It's Anthony Hopkins. Who cares? He's the one who's paying for this whole thing.
That's a big twist for some reason, obviously. But even though it's obvious that it has to be Anthony Hopkins, because like
see his name in the credits, who else is going to be doing the bone jacking?
It's, you know, he's a rich guy and like you only see him in video and you're like, oh, that's interesting. Like video phones are huge in 2009.
Man, they really overshot the importance of video
phones. We didn't even have FaceTime yet, actually. We didn't get there.
They call them vidphones.
Vidphone.
For short, you know?
A little hipper, short-handed. Yeah, sure. Yeah, I got that. Well, it's almost like iPhone, so they were close, kind of.
Well, sometimes not really. I mean, like, part of the vidphone thing is like Mick Jagger's wall of his apartment.
Well, no,
it's a vidphone.
It's Back to the Future 2 kind of
it really
video
is.
Phone technology.
You got Mick Jagger, betting needles, all kinds of shit up there on the big screen.
Actually, David Johansen kind of looks like Flea also.
He kind of does.
So he gets, you know, grabbed into 2009 and before he can be lobotomized, which I guess is a process, you know, because they're going to swap out your brain anyway.
Yeah, you got to clean. You got to clean slate going.
Yeah, exactly. You got to
blank canvas.
You got to erase that 3-inch, 3/4-inch floppy disk. their caravan is like attacked by rebels because it's also kind of dystopian and not post-apocalypse exactly.
Right, and it's all set in New York City, so this band of rebels are attacking them in, I think it's like Spanish Harlem or something.
Yeah,
it's all... Because it's definitely like Upper East Side.
The geography's very sketchy.
Yeah, it's a loose New York City geography. So they're hit by like a rocket or something, and Emilio doesn't get the lobotomy. He wakes up. He's like, he thinks he's in a hospital. You know, what kind of hospital is this kind of a thing? Escapes. And then the movie is fucking Mick Jagger trying to track him down.
He also kills a bunch of those like scientist surgeon people.
Those are some of the rudest doctors you'll ever hear in a movie.
Well, you know, they're not like dealing with a patient they want to keep alive.
Yeah, I guess they don't really need bedside manner.
They're a bit indignant about it, for sure.
Yeah, they're like, honestly, it's like Emilio Estevez woke up and was like, it's like he woke up in a vet's office, like you're just being treated like a goddamn animal.
Well, that's what, you know, it kind of makes you terrified, like if you ever have to have an operation or something, like what these people are saying about you once you're under, because they think he can't hear so, and they're like, oh, who's this? Oh, look at this ugly guy. Yeah, he'll make a good replacement for this rich customer.
Well, now are you coming out against bone jacking now?
No, I'm coming out against rude bone jacking doctors.
Just be nice about it.
I mean, it's just here, it's a 10-hour day. Imagine you're working on a spreadsheet and all of a sudden it starts running away. You'll get pissed off.
You know what? If I was sitting there and somehow a spreadsheet ran off my computer, I'd let it go because that little guy earned it. He go. Somehow found the means to come off a computer screen and run away from
me. Yeah, that's when I go home early for the day.
So Mick Jagger has to report this problem to his direct superior. And there's a big overall, like, you know, like a over... It owns everything, kind of a global company in this movie, like,
as you do in a post-apocalyptic 2009.
Yeah, like McCandless Enterprises or whatever it is. It's some take on Anthony Hopkins' last name.
Yeah, his last name is McCandless.
Right, and so it's so like, it's, you know, like McCann a very Corps, literal. Yeah, you know, who cares? So Mick Jagger's got to go report to the dude who hired him, which is Breaking Bad's Mike the Cleaner, Jonathan Banks. It's always amazing to see him not play Mike the Cleaner. Like he's done a guest spot on Modern Family playing Ed O'Neill's brother, which is kind of interesting.
Oh, and he was also on Parks and Rec as
he's Adam Scott's father too. And I'm just waiting for him to beat the shit out of somebody. But in this movie, he's just like, now, Mick, you told me you were going to get this free Jack.
It's a very RoboCop scenario. Like he's just, anything to get ahead in the corporation, Walter. You know, like whatever it is, it's just he will do everything. It's so RoboCop. It's a bit much.
Yeah, dystopian future, big corporation runs everything, and this guy's like looking to get to the top. Yeah, I can see that. Or he's kind of just like, look at my evil bad guy ponytail. That's the size of a Mike and Ike. He's got a miniature ponytail in this movie.
It's not even a ponytail. You're just putting a little rubber band at the back of your kind of long hair.
I mean, I guess, you know, I mean, we all know what Mike the Cleaner looks like now. Like, Jonathan Banks is a bald man. So maybe, you know, it's just one of those, you're hanging on to whatever scraps you got left. Make a cool ponytail out of it if you're playing a villain.
It's working for George Carlin, I guess.
Jonathan Banks is going to come to my house and beat the shit out of me now.
I would love to watch that.
Make fun of my ponytail, Walter. Why are you calling me Walter?
It's the only way I can relate to people, Walter. And he just kills you.
There's a great moment in this scene where Mike the Cleaner's got a collection of Fabergé eggs on his desk. That like is you such would. It's such a shitty like movie rich person thing of like, well, he's got a bunch of money. What's he going to spend it on? Oh, I know. Fabergé eggs.
And like, what's his name? Mick Jagger picks one up and like, he's a genius. Like, oh, an interesting egg. What's this, Fabergé? Like, of course it is.
Yeah,
you can tell the Fabergé egg because it's a fucking Fabergé egg.
Actually, Walter, it's hard boiled.
It's my lunch. My granddaughter was really overzealous at Easter.
Decorating eggs is an art form, Walter.
Isn't it ironic that I have this very sweet relationship with my little daughter, but I'm also really a hardcore criminal? I love that show.
I do too. It's just great making that voice.
Mick Jagger has like his bone jackers, and they're yeah. just like this crew of like gray stormtroopers that have laser guns that never really hit anything.
Yeah, again, by the way, laser guns in 2009.
It happened, man.
Well, that's kind of the weird thing about this movie. And, like, I think John Shay, Lois and Clark's Lex Luthor, explains that he's like, this is how the future is, everybody. You got the people at the top, you got the people on the bottom, but there's nobody in the middle. And that's what the production design is in this entire movie. It's like, it's either shithole nothing or it's like bubble cars and laser boats.
Yeah, why can't I just get a nice shot of like a raised ranch house somewhere? You know what I mean? A nice quaint 3-bedroom, 2.5 bath. No, it's either squalor or palatial estates. What's his face? Romero did that in that Land of the Dead. It's the exact same thing. Replacing Mike the Cleaner with Dennis Hopper, though, that's a trade up. Yeah. No offense to Jonathan Banks, but that's a trade
replacing
up.
Replacing Free Jacks with zombies, that's a trade up.
Man, how fucking unfortunate would it be if, like, you accidentally Free Jacked a zombie?
Here's a good question. Trade up or trade down from Emilio Estevez to John Leguizamo? Which way are you going there?
Wait.
Because John Leguizamo's in Land of the Dead.
Oh, right. For acting or who would I rather free Jack? I mean, bone Jack.
Who would you rather bone and or free Jack?
You know, bone, bury, kill or whatever.
Bone Jack, free Jack or screw Jack?
Yes. Or the less popular yellow Jack.
Bone Jack, free Jack or say Jack?
Well, it's annoying because the outcome's always two different people and then Pat Sajak.
And he's always wasted.
I would not trade for Pat Sajak any of those times. I guess Emilio Estevez most definitely has to be the answer.
Yeah, he's better.
I just can't suffer John Leguizamo in anything under the sun. I don't think there's been one thing where I'm like, you know, John Leguizamo was okay in that. I mean, anything?
No.
Right?
Well, we could talk about Emilio Estevez because he's the star of this movie and this movie we're doing in an episode.
That's probably a good idea.
I think Charlie Sheen's the better actor. I mean, it goes, you got your Martin, you got your Charlie, you got Emilio, and then you got that weird twin that looks like, I don't even know.
Wait,
like,
what? Is there another one?
Martin Sheen's like brother.
Joe Estevez.
Oh, yes.
From Soul Taker.
Yo, yeah. All right, I'll take Joe Estevez. He's got a list of credits I can get behind. I mean, these movies are so crazy.
But I mean, I just feel like Emilio Estevez is fine. Like, he's great in the Breakfast Club. Comedic stuff, he's a little bit better. He cannot play a hard ass at all.
No, and that's what, I mean, I think he's great in comedies. You know, I think Loaded Weapon's a really hilarious movie.
Yeah, he's funny in that.
He's pretty good in those Stakeout movies. Mm-hmm. I like him in those. I mean, the Mighty Ducks movies are fine. Who cares? But he's not an action star in any capacity. You know, at least not a tough action star. Action comedy? Sure, I'll get behind that. But yeah, it's just, you're supposed to be like, all right, one, he's a race car driver, which I guess is okay. I can accept that part. But like, he's shooting people and pointing Uzis in Mick Jagger's face, and it's just not happening.
The weird thing about the Emilio Estevez non-comedy roles
is he's kind of like he's always in a car because you got Repo Man, you've got this movie, and you've got that Maximum Overdrive. Mm,
and Men at Work is a garbage truck.
He's kind of like a, what do you call it, a little Happy Meal toy with a little, different little car every time, which I would love that set, by the way.
You got Emilio in a garbage truck, Emilio in a flying alien Cadillac or whatever Harry Dean Stanton's driving around in that movie. By the way, I'm excited for that to come on Criterion Blu-ray.
That'd be a great toy. It'd be just like this little Cadillac Hot Wheel that glows in the dark.
Yeah, totally. And now this one is him and like Mick Jagger's in his dumb little tank and he's got a little bobblehead. Mick Jagger kind of looks like a bobblehead anyway.
He does. You know, if you got that character in the Happy Meal, it would be like when you ask your mom to ask the McDonald's attendant for a different toy and you're like, just tell her I already have this one.
It's, I mean, so the first real thing, like you get, you know, he's looking around, he goes to his old apartment, and like in every futuristic, future gone wrong movie, a black family lives there, which is,
I don't get that.
It always rubs me the wrong way, because wait, what the fuck are you doing in my house? And it's like, well, they just live, it's the future, man. They just moved in. It's fine.
That's the other thing. It's also, I mean, it's shitty because
the future's way too progressive for my taste.
They bring in all the whole, you know, like economic part of it, which is really shitty, but the other coin, the other side of that coin, is like, look, it's been 18 years. What if Rene Russo's just banging a black guy now? Yeah. And Emilio Estevez is like, how dare you open this door?
I don't understand it. It's like, it's always like, oh my God, the future is not what I expected. Why? Because a black guy lives
that
in your house?
That would be great if Rene Russo was behind that door too. And the dude just like turns to her and is like, Julie, you know this clown. It would be kind of a better movie.
But no, of course, it's like it's some other family. And of course, the guy's got a sawn off shotgun that he points in his face. Like, get out of here, turkey. And you're like, oh, man.
And the wife is like, oh, I know where that woman lives. She moved out of here years ago. I don't know what the fuck lives in my apartment before they did.
Because he's like, oh, I'm looking for Julie so-and-so. And she's like, oh, well, she hasn't lived here for years. I'm like, what business is it of yours?
What's great is the lady starts to put together and she's just like, oh my God, he's a free Jack.
No, that's impossible. I was with her here this morning.
Oh my God.
He's a free Jack.
A what?
We can't help you. Can't anybody help you? Get away, I'll call Central. Now move. Move!
Now, all right. The world of body jacking or bone jacking, rather, and being a free Jack, question I have. Right. So she's like, oh, my God, he's a free Jack. You know, Henry, close the door or whatever, you know. This is what I want to ask is like the whole thing of a free Jack getting away. Such a huge problem that society knows, like, oh, my God, one, he must be a free Jack. And two, I'm going to be reprimanded for harboring a free Jack. I can't let him into my house. How many times are other, you know, Emilio Estevez's breaking away from Mick Jagger's clutches?
I think I just cracked this nut. And I believe that when we were talking earlier about JFK possibly being the first free Jack. Jack Kennedy, free Jack.
Oh.
They got Jack Kennedy, blasted him into the future, and I'm not going to go along with that. And then he was the first free Jack, and that's why the term is so popular, because you had an ex-president running around the streets blowing people to hell.
So Jack Kennedy was like that monkey at the end of Planet of the Apes who says no, that Rise of the Planet of the Apes. Jack Kennedy was like, Ira, no, yep. I will not be your body double.
Yes.
That's what you say?
I want to see that movie. I'd like to see that free Jack.
Jack Kennedy and a talking chimp just going around trying to take down Anthony Hopkins and Mick Jagger. Way better movie than
I think
this.
It has as much to do with the sci-fi source material as this free Jack does. Whatever bullshit novel this is written off of.
But, you know, some 1950s book that's kind of essentially just about time travel.
I think it's called Immortality, Inc.
Yeah, you know, and it's like time travel as a business, but that's pretty much where it stops. So he goes to that apartment, gets shot out by those people, and seeks refuge in a church where we meet what I think to be one of the most annoying character actors working today, Amanda Plummer, playing a hard apple nun.
I like Amanda Plummer. I think that she's got an off-kilter sensibility. I think she's great in Pulp Fiction. I give her I give her a pass on everything. And So I Married an Axe Murderer.
Steve's just like, you know what, guys? She's always playing the same bipolar chick. It's great.
In this Congress of We Hate Movies, I will abstain my vote on Amanda Palmer.
Oh, wow. Sit down, sir. So, you know, he goes to this church and passes out, and not even in the wretched year of 2009 can you find sanctuary anymore, because she's like, does she pull a gun on him right here?
She does. Yeah. She's a big old nun with a gun.
Mother yeah, Superior totally. Exposition comes in and is like, okay, you're a free jack. This is how it goes. You got to get your three tokens. I mean, I don't even know what the hell the point is. He just has to outlast Mick Jagger in this movie.
Well, that's the thing. There's really no kind of goal. Like, he's trying to find the person who bought his body.
Right. Yeah. But there are some stakes here also for the antagonist that is Anthony Hopkins, because he's in the spiritual switchboard.
Oh,
which
Jesus Christ.
It's, you know, he uploads via the Jesus Christ / computer. And he's in this grid that's like some type of internet, and he's only there for 36 hours. They need to get a nice jack in that seat within that time.
Do you think so Mick Jagger comes into the where Anthony Hopkins' consciousness is being held, right? And you know, you can communicate with him. Like, he communicates throughout this whole movie electronically. It's kind of like Ghost in the Machine. And, you know, Mick Jagger walks in. He's like, hey, man, totally lost Emilio Estevez. Like, it's just, it's not going to happen. But guess what? I have this really cool Chinese guy that we just bone jacked. You think Anthony Hopkins is having a problem with that?
I hope not.
Being the body of a Chinese man.
I think he would have a problem with it.
Oh, that's one vote you'll pass.
Where is Anthony? I mean, this is right. This is right before Silence of the Lambs.
No, this is his first theatrical film after playing Hannibal Lecter.
It must have been filmed before. You know what I mean? Right?
Oh, or
right before
knows?
He got nominated.
Ah, I mean,
do you
it's
think
possible.
They free-jacked him into this movie?
Where am I?
His contract free-jacked him.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if this was a movie that was kind of shelved and then maybe released when he won the Oscar kind of a thing. But I mean, this is right there. Like, when this movie came out,
I mean,
he had been Hannibal Lecter already.
He could have done Hannibal Lecter and then immediately booked this afterwards before it was released.
Yeah, not knowing what was going to happen.
Because, I mean, he also, I mean, there's no way in hell he didn't just film this role in a day. There's just...
Yeah,
it's mostly him doing like video, talking into the camera
stuff.
Yeah,
into his vid phone.
Yeah, please.
So that's like, he's doing those in one take because he's Anthony Hopkins and he's a professional. He's just like, change my tie, we'll do the next one. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing.
And by the way, yeah, the whole thing with him is he owns this big corporation that has developed the bone jacking technology, among other things. You know, it's one of those corporations, like I said, it's got a finger in a lot of pies. And, he is Rene Russo's boss. Rene Russo, we come to find out, is this, you know, very high-powered businesswoman in 2009. She's really made something of herself. Honestly, probably wouldn't have gone that way if she stayed with that deadbeat race car driver.
Well, that's the weird thing about this movie, is it also kind of thinks that that's a bad thing. Like, the fact that she works for this bullshit fucking corporation
and she's
living in a fucking squat makes her a bitch. And it's like, I think that's fine.
Well, I mean, it's sort of like this socioeconomic complaint that this movie has against her is that she lives down at Battery Park in like this fancy skyscraper, while only part of the city is in this normal zone and the rest of it's like Escape from New York.
Yeah. What's kind of ironic about this 2009 New York City is that if you look at that map, I think like the golden part of town is just everything below 14th Street, which isn't necessarily true. Some of those areas below 14th Street.
Well, you know, the more and more rich people move to the city every day, and they just, that's what they do, man. That's
so
what
this
they
is
do.
2009 was like when gentrification really hit a peak.
And I kind of got free-jacked out of New York. I live in New Jersey now.
You got free-jacked right out of this town.
You know, it's true. The rent is too damn high.
I'm going to have to free-jack that joke back to 2008.
You know, if anyone wants to swoop in here and joke-jack some of these, go for it.
So
he meets up with his pal Buster Poindexter.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Like, he's like, oh, hey, it's you. Oh, my God, you totally got freejacked. Like, everybody, no one's shocked about the freejacking. Everyone's like, oh, look, it's a freejack. Like,
just, yeah, totally. Buster Poindexter acts like he saw him yesterday.
He's
like, oh, come on in, Emilio. And you're just like, really? Not any kind of like, hey, man, where you been?
You're a living ghost. Like, nothing.
That would be great if it's just like someone gets like, oh, man, you're a free jack, blah, blah, blah. And it's just like, turns out he was just a ghost.
He's a ghost the whole time.
That would be a great twist ending. He actually died.
Yeah, and he's just been a ghost the whole time. That's somehow tangible.
Yeah, that time in the jewelry store when he breaks the mirror that his wife's looking at, that's because he was a ghost.
Buster Poindexter's got a bullshit thing where like he lives in a slum. But he's kind of like a low-level criminal, so he's got like a stack of boxes that's actually like a Murphy bed type situation. Like it's a fold-down wall, and he's like, you know, in this kind of society, you just got to keep all your worldly possessions out of harm's way. And I'm like, oh, he's a secret rich man. That's cool. And this wall comes down, and it's kind of just the same apartment on the other side.
It's got one of those like blue liquid, like bouncing back and forth kind of things.
See, behind the false walls where I keep my Swanson dinners.
There's a lot of cartons of like cool cigarettes hanging around.
And he lives in this is for our New York listeners, this will make sense. He lives in Park Slope, the neighborhood of Brooklyn, which has been just dilapidated to the point where it looks like the set of Deadwood, but it has porno theaters.
It is Deadwood with 3D porno theaters.
Oh, yeah, they're 3D nudes.
Jim J. Bullock would love that. That's not his name. What's his name in that movie? That show?
Seth Bullock, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, there you go. Who's Jim J. Bullock?
That's the guy that used to be on...
He runs the Daily Bugle in New York City.
It's J. Jonah Jameson.
Oops.
Jim J. Bullock played Monroe on Too Close for Comfort.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Watch some Too Close for Comfort. Is that on Netflix?
I don't think so.
That's too bad. So back to this movie. You can see, by the way, I mean, this is a movie where we're just going a little tangent heavy. Because seriously, it's bone jacking, 8 car chases, and then the end of the movie. That's really all we're dealing
and
with here.
The one thing, the thread is, and it should be... It should be your Jean Valjean and your whatever the fuck Fat Russell Crowe is in that movie.
Oh,
Judge Dredd.
Yes, Jean Valjean and Judge Dredd. The classic Victor Hugo pairing.
That Les Miserables.
Les Miserables.
His name is Javert.
Javert, yeah. It should be that, right? Like, it's just he's chasing them up and down, and you know what I mean? Like, and they hate each other's fucking guts. And that should be kind of the core of the movie, that they're on opposite ends. Even though they could be friends, but they're not because they hate each other so much.
Yeah. You know, I would have loved, actually, if this movie ended with Mick Jagger throwing him into whatever fucking water cesspool that was. That is the suicide of the century.
Oh, man. Russell Crowe in that fucking movie. Bites it on that thing.
Thud. Oh, man. Take that, Javert.
Whoa, spoilers.
Spoilers from a fucking 20-year-old musical.
That's the joke.
And quite possibly the best picture of the year by the time this releases.
Yeah, actually, that's true.
Possibly not. So Buster Poindexter takes Emilio to this Park Slope bar. And you can really tell we're in a dystopian time period because the only signs on the walls the only beer ads on the walls are Schaefer and Schlitz.
Yeah, Schaefer and Schlitz, only visible beer labels in a Park Slope bar.
You know what? You could bone jack me 25 years in the future if that's the case. Keep bone jacking me until microbrews come back.
Just a holdover?
Yeah, just...
I mean, you know, I like Schlitz and Schaefer as much as the next person needs an emergency backup can of beer in the back of the fridge. But, you know, if it's a society where... How the fuck did Budweiser lose out to those people? I mean, this truly is a wretched society.
Franchise wars, man. We've seen them in Demolition Man.
Oh, man. Those fast food wars that Taco Bell somehow won.
Yeah, so it's just Taco Bell and Schlitz and... Schlitz and Schaefer are the only ones left duking it out anymore.
So I guess then the state of Wisconsin is the only place that's allowed to brew beer anymore.
That's right. There's an American purity law, and they also manufacture helmets. It's like a little oasis in this Midwestern death desert.
So in the shock of the century, Buster Poindexter turns out not to be a reputable person.
And what are you talking about? With a voice like this, how can I possibly be crooked? How could I be human garbage? Go sit down, Emilio. I'm just going to make a phone call.
And he, of course, calls Mick Jagger and the Bone Jacket Brigade.
1-800-BONE-JACKER? The Bone Jacker tip line?
Let me handle this, please.
Brad, I got to talk to her.
Listen, man, these things can see you. They can hear you. Your voice goes out on one of these lines, you're done for. Now, trust me.
But he's saying to him, like, listen, I'm going to call Rene Russo. You can't use the phone because if your voice goes over these futuristic telephone lines, they'll catch you in a second.
Yeah.
And he calls Mick Jagger. He calls the cops and whatever.
And there's a big struggle. All the Bone Jackers show up. And he's like, oh, you ratted me out. And, like, you would figure either Emilio Estevez would kill Buster Poindexter or Mick Jagger's crew.
Yeah, that makes sense, right?
But he was just kind of messing with this hobo's lunch, like trying to be in a dick. And the guy pulled out a gun and shot him in the chest.
Fuck with my plate of beans, will ya?
Well, he spilled some of the gruel or slop on him or something. And it just takes him out.
It just kills him.
Just shoots him dead.
Well, you know, he's kind of a dick to him when they walk in, though, because he's kind of flirting with this waitress. And then, like, he does pick food off this dude's plate. So that hobo, by 2009 law, has every right to assassinate him.
Yeah, I mean, they are in Deadwood, Brooklyn.
So he's dead.
And now we're just in a series of car chases takes up...
And a motorcycle chase.
Motorcycle car...
It's a low-speed motorcycle chase. Like, Emilio Estevez, for the first three quarters of this chase, is on foot, outrunning motorcycles down alleys. That is the level of high octane we're reaching with this movie.
And, you know, he commandeers a car, and, like, he's kind of talking to Mick Jagger via laptop. And, like, it's a stupid thing where he keeps closing the laptop, and Mick Jagger keeps making it pop open from somewhere else. Like, trying to get rid of me, eh? Not going to happen today. And it's like, oh, my God, shut up.
These, like, 1990s filmmakers was like, yeah, by the time 2009 rolls around, sure, laptops can pop open on command. What are you, crazy? We're going to get tired of opening these computers with our hands.
They predicted Skype.
So blah, 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 big motorcycle chase. He makes his way into a car, and then it's a car versus tank race. And he finally gets to Rene Russo's apartment building and breaks in. He got her home address off of Poindexter there.
And it's just, you know, it's like she thinks that he's whoever bone jacked him. And she's like, you know, don't just cut. So I guess that must happen is like you look through the sexual history of whoever you bone jacked. You're like, hey, maybe I can make this happen. And you just go visit. Also, a big problem with this movie is Rene Russo and Buster Poindexter need age makeup, but they don't have it because it's 20 years in the future.
How on earth was this skipped over? And it's not like we're complaining like they did a poor job and we're being picky about it. Literally nothing has happened to these people in 18 years.
You couldn't even maybe put fucking baby powder in Buster Poindexter's hair.
No, there's no sign of like older hair, no like fake crow's feet or anything.
Maybe it's Maybelline.
Do you think it's one of those things they didn't really like? Maybe it's a deleted scene where it's like, you know, like Brazil. By the time 2009 rolls around, like, you know, like cosmetic surgery is just like through the roof. Well, great.
That's what it has to be. And I'm guessing that these old rich men probably live to like 200 before they need a good bone jack.
Yeah, I mean, who knows what's going to happen in 2009? I guess we could just all speculate. just sit around and speculate on the magical, wonderful year of 2009.
It was a far-off dream to these people. Like, they're sitting around making this movie like, well, we're all going to be dead by then, right? So who cares?
Exactly. You'll be 41. Like, what? What do you think?
Jeez, might as well be bone-jacked.
I just don't understand it.
Sure, I'll get bone-jacked before I'm 40. So she starts freaking out and, you know, calls security on him and everything.
And then Jagger shows up again.
And then, yeah, and then exactly, Jagger shows up again and we're just back in another chase scene.
It's just, yeah, I mean, like, that's the problem with this movie. It's just a soggy middle of, it's cat and mouse, but it's not, the action isn't really choreographed very well. There's not a lot of thought about what the future is. You know what I mean? It's just, the only thing this movie's got going for it is like, who really is behind it all. But obviously it has to be Anthony Hopkins.
From scene one, you know that he's behind this entire bonejacking scandal. There's no reason to keep it a secret.
The three twists at the last parts of this movie are, one, Jonathan Banks is more evil than he set out to be. Big fucking surprise.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Hopkins is on top, and Mick Jagger's kind of best pals with Emilio Estevez.
Yeah, that one is probably the most surprising. But I mean, the Jonathan Banks thing too, it's out of nowhere where he's like, by the way, Walter, if Anthony Hopkins doesn't get into Emilio's body, then I'm going to somehow be the head of this corporation. And you're like, wait, oh, it's a power play? Well, whatever. Because that's the other thing, right? This is how this this Mick Jagger, Emilio Estevez friendship blossoms, because Jonathan Banks, being crooked like he is, hires mercenaries to go and like counter-strike Mick Jagger's squadron and wipe them all out. And Emilio Estevez, for no reason, saves Mick Jagger's life at the end of one of these car chase slash shootouts.
Which is really ridiculous. I mean, this guy's been hunting you from day one, and he drives around in a candy red apple tank. And he should have just killed Jagger there.
Kill Jack him.
You gotta kill Jack him. Well, because what is that setting up? So like, oh, he's our grand hero, so he's not gonna take a level. Like, what is he, fucking Batman? Just kill this guy.
Exactly. They're like giving him like a higher sense of like moral being or whatever. And they're also playing up that stupid like, oh, well, we both respect each other so much, even though we're fighting each other.
I hate that. What happens? What if at the end of No Country for Old Men, Antron Sugar just comes up to fucking Josh Brolin's like, hey, want to go get a beer instead of fight each other? And like, they just go and just hang out somewhere. Isn't that a better movie? No, of course not. They need to be at odds.
But here's the thing, is at least with that is they know, like, in No Country for Old Men, Woody Harrelson's character knows of Javier Bardem's character's like sordid history. So there can maybe be some type of like, well, you're so good at what you do type of thing. But this, they just, Mick Jagger and Emilio Estevez met the other day. Like, yeah. Why would you have a respect for each other?
He's just another free jack, man.
Yeah, totally. He's just another free jack. You've presumably, because you are billed as like the best free jack bounty hunter in the whole world, you've done this before.
He's an Excel spreadsheet that you forgot to click save on. Now he's running around town. You got to get him.
Professional bone jacker. And he calls towards the start of the movie when Emilio initially gets away. He tells his troopers to get the meat.
Yeah. Okay.
Get the meat.
This movie takes place total tops over 48 hours.
It feels like fucking 48 hours. I'll tell you that much.
There's no way this dude's going from mate to best buds. We're winking at each other as you let him go at the end of this movie.
Yeah,
because by the way, he literally just lets him drive off into the sunset with Rene Russo. It makes no goddamn sense.
And it just guts this movie. I mean, like, he's not a great character. And Mick Jagger's a pretty terrible actor. So, like, there's not. But, like, if there is a cool character in this movie, if you're trying to make a cool character,
yeah,
it's Mick Jagger. And the way you keep him cool is keep him as a villain.
They definitely wanted to make him a cool character.
Yeah.
Oh, without a doubt.
What was his name again in this movie?
Oh, that's right. Vicendak.
Vicendak. Yeah. It's me. Hello, it's me, Vicendak. You bored yet?
And everybody is calling him Vicendak. Everybody knows who Vicendak is.
He's a citywide figure.
That's his name. He has a red tank. Yeah, he's supposed to be a cool guy. He's like Ray Kelly if he was a rock star, the chief of police in New York.
I don't care if your name's Vicendak. I'm going to call you Walter regardless. It's the only way I could access this impression.
I refuse to pronounce Polish last name, Walter. You're Walter White. How about that, Vicendak?
You know what, Grandpa?
You just did it.
You know what, Grandpa? You call me Walter one more time, I am leaving today.
Look, Walter, who's going to provide for your future? Your deadbeat mother that we don't really know too much about on this show?
I don't get that. What's with Mike the Cleaner's mother or daughter?
She's just, you know, she's figuring it out.
You think they had a falling out? Because he drops her off that one time, and he's like, say goodbye, Walter. It really is the only way I can sort of drop into doing that voice, is saying Walter.
I mean, the third act, now that we're in the third act of this movie, right?
I want to quickly touch on something, is there's not many of them in this movie of the action star quip.
But
at one point, a bone-jacking stormtrooper falls upon Emilio's car, and he does this maneuver to throw the guy from the car, and he says, "Mom told me to never pick up hitchhikers."
Oh, classic move.
And you could just tell because Emilio Estevez's voice is just a little too high to pull it off. It's like, this guy's not destined for action movie stardom.
Well, okay, let me ask you this, though. Everybody caught Emilio Estevez doing an Arnold Schwarzenegger impression in this movie, right?
No.
He totally quotes Terminator in this movie. He's yelling at Mick Jagger, and he's in his, like, you know, sort of high, crazy Emilio Estevez voice. And then he just goes, "Fuck you, asshole."
Oh, yeah, that's right.
He does the Terminator / Commando line in this movie.
And his character's name is Alex Furlong. I kept thinking about Edward Furlong and Terminator through the whole thing.
Talk about wanting to watch another movie while fucking Free Jack's up. Holy shit.
Another great thing that they set up in this movie is that they actually give a price of how much Emilio Estevez is worth.
This is exorbitant.
He's the $10 million man.
$10 million for this guy. That's how much Anthony Hopkins doesn't want to live in a Chinese man's body.
I mean, wouldn't you want somebody that's 5'8"? Like, literally. If you're going to spend $10 million, I'm going to get LeBron James.
It's perfect. I'll finally get into my crawl space. Clear it out. I'm like, I always wanted to be a... Next 100 years, it could be a little man, you know, just getting into things.
Well, okay, you own the company that does bone jacking, so you're probably, if not getting it for free, maybe an employee discount. That's pretty sweet. But if you are paying it, it's not cheap, right? Like, you're stealing someone from the past and putting your consciousness into their body. Pretty heavy price tag.
Yeah.
So on top of that, stupid Vicendak lets this dude escape. Now you got to throw out another $10 million.
But consider
the way Emilio Estevez gets away. It's like he's like just goes under things all the time. Vicendak's got a big net and he just goes whoop.
Now, and this is also something that's stupid. Like, yeah, $10 million is a lot of money to idiot, you know, people like us. But to McCandless, who pretty much owns the city, / America, maybe, that's not a lot of money. Why wouldn't you at least have a backup? If you're like, this is the day I got to do my bone jacking, get a backup.
Oh, you know, I think part of it is, and this is kind of in the movie, and I'm not making this up entirely, is that he wants to be with Rene Russo, and he knows that she's got a thing.
Oh.
Like, so it's like kind of, it's
she's
like
got being, a thing for that. Guy
that dead died. Guy. Yeah. Like, it's kind of like you're the creepiest boss in history. Like, you can't even make it happen just because you're the rich old guy at work. So you have to, like, steal some young man's body that she used to bang.
That's great. Now, if the next girl you meet, you like her, what you should do is just steal the body of her ex-boyfriend and then put your mind into it.
I mean, I can understand Anthony Hopkins' logic, but, like, seriously, he just walks in like, "Hello, Jewel. Remember me from 18 years ago?" And she's like, "Oh, that boyfriend I had?" Like, you have to have details down pretty hardcore. This theory is a lot better than my theory, which was that Anthony Hopkins is a fan of long-deceased amateur funny car racers.
He's been them all. Just cycling through them. Number 3, RIP.
So he jumps off, Emilio Estevez, that is, jumps off the Manhattan Bridge at one point in a big detour that this movie takes for some reason. And I want to talk about it really quickly because it sets up a really stupid thing that never really gets paid off in this movie. So he washes ashore. Which, you know, jumping into that East River in 2009, like, even Mick Jagger's like, if he swallows any of that water, he's dead. And I'm like, yeah, that's right.
That yeah, they got 2009 right there.
Yeah.
But I mean, or I mean, look how bad that water would be in this post-apocalyptic New York.
That's Mr. true. McCandless, I'm calling it off. He's got herpes. He's got to have herpes. You're gonna find some other racer that some other wacky racer that died. Maybe Snidely Whiplash.
That would be the perfect body. But
a little taller than Emilio Estevez.
Could you bone jack that dog to put bone jack Muttley to put Jonathan Banks in him?
Woof woof, Walter.
So he washes ashore in Brooklyn and he runs across character actor Frankie Faison. Also his biggest movie since playing the orderly in Silence of the Lambs. And Frankie Faison is kind of this, prophetic homeless man who's eating grilled river rat because that's the future and it's either rich people or poor people eating dead rats. And he reveals that somehow, and again, this makes no sense, but somehow over the course of his short adventure in 2009, Emilio Estevez has become a modern day folk hero to the poor people of New York City. Why? What? Why?
24-hour news cycle.
They got to print something, I guess. I don't get it either.
What is he inspiring? He's a white guy. Like, you
know
what I mean? Like,
he could get away from the mega money men.
Right, but the whole thing is the reason why they're not bonejacking people in present day, as Buster Poindexter explains in his expository monologue, is because, again, in just a short 18 years, the ozone's been completely eradicated from the planet. Sure. So everyone's got a bunch of health problems. So he's like, it's pointless to bonejack a person who lives in the present day because they're so fucking disgusting and riddled with diseases.
That's bullshit, man. If I was Anthony Hopkins, I would get a bunch of babies and raise them until like they're like, you know, like two or three. Well, you know, you have people to do that.
Anthony sure. Hopkins baby farm?
Yeah, and then you put yourself into a baby, you know? I mean, you still have your mind and everything. It's
how
good.
Annoying would that be, though? If your adult consciousness went into a baby and you're just pissing and shitting yourself and you can't talk, or you can talk, and then you're a creepy talking baby, which nobody wants to deal with.
Baby genius, man. Sign me up.
You'd be fucking butchered. They would be like, holy shit, this is a mistake from God and kill you.
What? This is a mistake.
A talking baby who sounds like Anthony Hopkins, but he's still shitting his pants? It's a mistake.
I don't think that's God. I think that's Satan. But I would totally do it. That'd be great because then, I mean, think of how powerful you will be once you come into your own again.
Eric Siska's baby farm, I guess. Baby Jack.
Is that creepier to jack babies? I mean,
yes, it's creepier to jack
babies. At least they haven't had a life yet, you know? It's not like I'm taking anything that they've experienced.
Apropos of nothing, which is the subtitle of this episode, is I was looking at a catalog from the 92nd Street Y the other day, and one of the classes or courses they offer is baby massage. And I've been sitting on this for a while because I find it really disturbing
that
and weird.
Is.
Like, what why was the description?
Baby, it's just like, you know, come with your baby.
Dude, I got to bring my own baby.
You're going to provide the babies for this baby massage or what?
It's just like, what the fuck's a baby got to be tense for unless they're Anthony Hopkins?
Yes. You know what? Sign me up. Put me in a baby. Give me a massage.
Thank you, 92nd Street Y, for offering this course. My baby's constantly tearing muscles on the uneven bars. Like, what the fuck do you need to massage a baby for?
Well, during tax season, everybody's a little tense.
Well, maybe it's a thing if, like, your baby has some sort of health problems, then, like, maybe it's justified. But you know what? Just don't call it baby massage, okay, everybody?
You can check that out. That's a real thing, and it's gross, and it's weird.
Steve Sadek's baby massage, real. Eric Siska's baby farm, not just yet.
Yeah, maybe
in 2009 you can have a baby farm.
Exactly.
magical year.
I'm holding out for that other dimensional 2009.
So he's a folk hero, and it comes to nothing because no one ever brings it up ever again.
And I mean, like, it's not even like anyone gives a shit aside from Mick Jagger. So, like, yeah, he saves Mick Jagger, and now Mick Jagger's kind of on his side, but still kind of going after him because he's like, he's a guy, like, you know nothing else about Mick Jagger, so he's defined by his job. So if he has that, then he's nothing.
He's just a shark. He has to continue hunting or he'll die.
Yeah.
And one place where they track him down is at 42nd and 8th Avenue, which is this like club called Industrial Revolution. And it's basically, you know, it's a little weird. It's a
weird club. Well, this is what's kind of stupid.
It's your standard future bar.
It's a future bar
slash gay club.
If, you know, your society is so terrible now, right? With like there's no ozone and everybody's got health problems. Why would you name your club like after an era where there was nothing but fucking black lung and child labor death?
Because we can relate to it and we like putting gears on the walls. Because we have fun here. It's like fucking Fridays.
And yeah, of course, it's like, again, it's 18 years in the future, and of course we're drinking fucking Romulan ale because it's so out of control.
It's totally Romulan ale. It's blue and it fucks you up real good.
It doesn't make any sense. Like, there's no way time changes that quickly, everybody.
Maybe by 2009 we would have made first contact with the Romulan Empire.
Oh, that's true. Maybe, you know what? Maybe First Contact split our dimension in two. We're just in this bullshit 2013, which is boring.
I know. And then you got the Romulan 2009, and you got the Borg one.
So we're in the Borg one where we're not lucky enough to have baby farms. That's what you're saying?
Yep.
We got the baby massage under the stick.
There is a... God damn you, 92nd Street. Why? What is that? There is a great sex scene in this movie between, of course, Emilio Estevez and Rene Russo, where he finally convinces her that he's not Anthony Hopkins or whoever she thinks he is. And there's a great line where, like, he tries to make a move and she's sort of not having it. And she just goes, I watched you die. And then he, without saying anything, grabs her face and they just get it on. And totally awesome, sexy saxophone is playing.
What's the matter?
I watched you die.
There's actually a sexy saxophone in this movie that you think that's like, oh, yeah, they're just laying that on there. That's great. And then I saw a hobo with a saxophone.
You got hobos in the bedroom?
Maybe, yeah.
Well, that's like the ultimate thing for the rich, right, is that you can subjugate a homeless person so much that they have to play the saxophone while you have sex with somebody.
My name's Joe. I live in the closet. I play the sax. Emilio gives an interview on television at that club I was talking about. Then they can find him again because all the, you know, the ding-dongs go off in the bone jacker lab and they're like, oh, we traced him. He's at this club because his ringer went off. And then they go down, you know, they go to chase him again. So we get more chasing him again.
What I love about what those exchanges were at the bone jacker headquarters was like, hey, I found him, boss. Oh, really? What piece of sophisticated technology did you use to track him down? Oh, nothing. He's doing a television interview right now. And he's all drunk because he's like pissed on this Romulan ale. And he's just like, my name's Emilio Estevez and I'm a race car driver. And I'm also a free jack. Whoopty fuck. And I'm sitting there like, all right, like, I know you're drunk, but really? You're giving away every detail of who you are.
Yeah, I mean, your character name is supposed to be Alex Furlong.
I couldn't think of what it was.
And I mean, like, Mick Jagger's like, oh, good, because I was standing here doing nothing. Because he's just, every time he's not thrown that.
He loves the good stand.
Furlong hasn't thrown to him. He's got no move. He's not some, like, fucking brilliant detective.
And now we wait.
Like, Isai Morales is like, hey, boss, I tracked him down. And Mick Jagger is literally playing video games over in the corner. He's like, that's Pong 2009's great. Oh, what? You found him? I have to go back to work? All right.
Fine. It's weird in this 2009 that video game technology stalled to a crawl.
He is playing a really shitty video game.
Sure is.
Oh, also, by the way, great scene where we finally discover that Jonathan Banks is more crooked than we'd realize. Is he somehow is able to bring in
Amanda Plummer.
Amanda Plummer's nun character again. And it's a lot of like, now, Walter, tell me where the free jack is. And she just kicks him in the balls. Classic ball kick.
Man, it is a big old nut kick. They focus on this for a while. It's like 10, 15 seconds of him just heaving about his nuts.
And he does the classic Jerry Lewis eye cross gag. It's like one of the surf ninjas kicked him in the balls.
And there is a huge tone problem with this movie because it's like it's trying to be gritty and this like cool sci-fi thing, but it goes for like such dumb gags and like Arnold impressions. And
yeah, I don't get why we need so much goddamn comedy in this movie. I mean, it's bad. Attempts at comedy. Yeah, it's not good comedy.
Because Emilio can't handle. We've evidence he can handle a comedy.
So third act of this movie, they get to the top of the fucking tower, which is it's kind of awkward because it's located where the World Trade Center was, and this building kind of looks like the Freedom Tower.
It's actually next.
Is it right next door?
Yes, because the Twin Towers are standing in 2009. I don't know if you guys knew that, but they're still up. Then there's the giant, like, Freedom Tower thing.
It's like McCandless Corporation Tower, you know, but it looks exactly like the Freedom Tower.
You think those
mafia-connected architects that designed the Freedom Tower watched this movie and they were like, yeah, that'll do. Hey, we'll do a free jack. Gotta free jack the Freedom Tower.
Gonna build and jack that building from the fake year 2009.
Building jack that building.
And then you know, then they zap that building from that fake world into the real world, sort of like how King Koopa did it.
Yeah, they say it took a pit stop in the King Koopa dimension and then took a left.
Yeah.
Into our world.
That
I mean,
happen.
It's just it's your standard, I guess, standard. It's we're all in the tower together, and like everyone's gonna sit you down and tell you what the movie's been about this whole time. So like. Jonathan Banks is like, all right, Walter, sit down. I got a really long story to tell you, which you clearly could not give a shit about. But I used to be a cop, so listen to me. And he just goes on and on about, like, you know, now I'm going to, you know, once he's dead, then I could take over the corporation and God knows what.
And, you know, this guy was beating up on his girlfriend, and I had to keep going over there. And she didn't want to press charges, Walter.
And he gets out, and he sings Danny Boy, and it just rubbed me raw.
All right, everyone press pause and go watch Breaking Bad, the entire series, and then come back.
Get that fix and come back. Yeah, so he's like, all right, you know, here's my whole plan to a degree. He doesn't let in on this whole head of the corporation thing, but he's like, oh, you're aiding this free Jack Rene Russo? Well, guess what? You're fired. Anthony Hopkins wants to talk to you. And then they go into what is a total ripoff of the X-Men Danger Room. Like, they walk in, and it's just this big, like, nothing room. And then all of a sudden, it becomes a whole hologram thing. And Anthony Hopkins comes in, and he's like, by the way, I've been dead the whole time.
And in this hologram world, like, the way the world looks is weird. There's, like, clouds are going real quick. They're, like, in a weird desert. To me, I thought it was Saturn from the Beetlejuice movie, and I thought a sandworm was about to get them.
Can you imagine if that's how Mick Jagger's character was killed off? He's just eaten by a digital sandworm?
This movie could use a Beetlejuice. It could use
a couple of Beetlejuices.
It needs an anarchic character that's going to stir up some trouble. That's not fucking Emilio Estevez.
Yeah, you know, an interesting character I wouldn't mind watching.
It needs both Michael Keaton and the Howard Stern sidekick Beetlejuice.
All of them.
Both of Beetlejuices need to be in this movie to save it.
Did that other Beetlejuice die?
No, that was that's a shitty Beetlejuice impression. No, that was Hank the Angry Drunken Dwarf passed away.
Okay.
Beetlejuice is going to come up from time to time on low, like D-level direct-to-DVD horror movies.
Yeah, you'll get that. so, I mean, And now Anthony Hopkins has got a yard to talk to you about oh all of the things he's done in his life.
So many snake oil salesmen in this movie.
So many goddamn life stories that I don't need.
The end of this movie is like that movie Waking Life. Everyone's just like fucking blurry and just jawing on about shit I couldn't care less about.
And it's like, wait, what? Is this a dream? Am I in the future, the past? Am I being jacked?
Yeah, you know, when I sit down to watch my sci-fi action thriller, I want a bunch of philosophical musings about the end of your life. Thanks a lot, Anthony Hopkins.
I'm sorry, Joel. Sorry to deceive you. Mr. Furlong, please believe me, I never meant you any harm either. We took you out a fraction of a second before your death. The process, however, did not shorten your natural life.
What about trying to shorten my unnatural life?
And I always fancied shorter men. I like Napoleon. I like Muggsy Bogues, my favorite basketball star.
Why would you want a guy so short? I don't get it. Unless the theory about him wanting Rene Russo works out. So he gives this whole long spiel, and then he's like, all right, you know, I'm sorry, man. I can see that you guys are really meant for each other. Just punch in this code on this keypad and you'll delete me. Now, Emilio Estevez totally falls for this, and it's really disappointing because as the star of this action movie, you should know by now not to trust anyone that's associated with this corporation. You can't trust the hired hand bounty hunter in Mick Jagger. You certainly can't trust Jonathan Banks as his, like, you know, number two guy and whatever. Why then would you immediately trust the top of this corporation?
Well, because I guess what else are you going to do at this point?
You're like, at the final level in the video game. There's literally nowhere else for this movie to go.
You can't beat up a hologram.
And I mean, like, this should be a race. Like, he's a race car driver. Like, maybe it's like, if you can outrace me, then you win, Free Jack. Like,
right, because they're in the bullshit hologram land.
Holy shit, he makes him have a Tron Legacy race.
Yeah.
On those awesome neon motorcycles. Mm-hmm. Oh, shit, and Daft Punk starts playing. Yes.
You see, Alex, I'll be trapped in the grid unless I get into your body by midnight.
So he's a big liar, and then Jonathan Banks comes in, and he's like, now, Walter, I told you that you gotta get in his body. This is getting a bit ridiculous.
And it's, like, literally a, like, Daffy Duck cartoon where, like, they each have their hand on one, like, pod, and, like, there's a dumb fake science electricity going.
So much force lightning is happening.
There's some, they fall into an ocean of JPEGs.
I mean, this movie's 92, and I believe-ish Lawnmower Man's around the same time.
Yeah.
Lawnmower Man looks like it was made in 2009 compared to the graphics. And it's a series of shitty quality JPEGs of, like, shots from the movie. Like, I guess it's memories of Emilio Estevez.
Oh, and listen to Emilio Estevez's great action movie scream.
Stick to family-oriented hockey comedies. So after all this, you see his body, like, float into, like, a black nothing. And you're like,
Rene Russo in the middle of it takes a gun and blows, like, there's a force
correct.
Crystal in the middle of it.
It is a force crystal.
She blows Jor-El away, and
this whole machine goes up. Anthony Hopkins is deleted from the Matrix.
Well, but the thing is, enough time has passed that there have been bone-jacking transfers done in that matter of time.
Right.
So there's this whole thing that everyone in the room is like, who is he? Is he McCandless? Is he that dumb race car driver? What's going on? And this is where Emilio Estevez has the time to shine as we were treated to him playing Anthony Hopkins, trying to do Anthony Hopkins-like dialogue as this evil character.
Right, but he's playing it as, like, I, Emilio Estevez, the actor, am not trying to do an Anthony Hopkins impersonation.
Right.
So much as I, Emilio Estevez, the actor, am doing, like, a, this is what a rich and powerful person sounds like. Say there, Rene Russo, get in the car. hey, you, Mick Jagger, bring the car around first. Like, it's just, it's so unconvincing that if I am Mike the Cleaner or fucking Mick Jagger, I'm instantly like, well, this transfer didn't work, and you're still that dumb race car driver.
And, you know, like, Mike the Cleaner is Jonathan Banks is like, oh, I finally won, Walter. Now I'm the king of the company. And then, like, Mick Jagger's like, I don't think so. I think that's McCandless. And they go through this whole thing, and he's like, what's your personal access code? And it's like, are you kidding me? Numbers?
Yeah, okay. It's the movie's over. Let's just sit around while Emilio Estevez recites a couple of numbers for everybody.
And it's just like, he starts saying numbers, and like, Mick Jagger's like, yes, that's correct. Sorry, Mike the Cleaner. And he blows him away. And it's like, oh my God, it's Anthony Hopkins now, I guess.
But because we've seen all the rest of the movie Free Jack,
yeah,
we know that it's obviously just going to be Emilio Estevez. Yes. Like, at the end of the day, if he's like actually Anthony Hopkins in there and the transfer worked, like, that's kind of a redeeming, like, you know, a negative side to the story you're ending on. Like, okay, your movie's got a little bit of stone attached to it. But in this case, you just got a Rolling Stone who's fucking talking to Emilio Estevez and pretending like he doesn't know what's going on. And everyone in this movie is fooled but the audience. You know what I mean? Yeah. And he goes to drive away. And this is the end of the movie. He tells Rene Russo to get in this car, and they're going to drive out of the, you know, this Battery Park City compound.
And then Sugar comes up to Josh Brolin and is like, my birthday party's next week. Would you like to come?
You know, Zool and all the Ghostbusters go out for coffee. They just decided to call it a draw, you know. I think Katz's is still open, Zool. You want to go grab a bite? So they get to this fucking driveway, and Mick Jagger's like, you know, hey, just so you know, you blew it when you decided to drive yourself, because apparently Anthony Hopkins is incapable of driving a car. So.
Even though, yeah, I'm going to live hundreds of years or whatever the fuck, and I'm never going to learn to drive. Okay.
And he's like, all right, I just thought you should know that's where you slipped up. And he like points and he's like, God's out of the way.
And then Serpico and the rest of the New York cops form a fucking fantasy football league. Because that's the kind of movie we're making now. Why not? That's the end of it.
Yeah, and those numbers he recited, Mick Jagger lied about them. And because he just spouted nonsense, I guess.
There is no reason for Emilio Estevez to save his life earlier in the movie. And even if he does, well, fucking foolish you, Emilio Estevez, because this is supposed to be a true villain. He should be like, oh, you thought we were friends just because you saved my life? Well, guess what? Blammo.
Shoots him in the head right in the car. But what would, I mean, the thing is, like, you're transferring Anthony Hopkins' mind into Emilio Estevez's. Is it that far-fetched that maybe some would stay behind? Like, oh, he would know the number maybe? Like, I don't know.
Oh, I'm saying like some of Anthony Hopkins like trickled off?
Yeah, like, why not, right?
That would have been fine too. Like, oh yeah, I got half of his memory or whatever.
That's what I thought kind of happens right away, because when Emilio is like getting up off the ground, he says like, you know, hold on a second or something like that. And it sounded kind of like they dubbed over Anthony Hopkins. And I was like, oh no, is Emilio Estevez just going to have like Anthony Hopkins ADR for the rest of the movie? Ew.
Like that Superman 4 with,
oh yeah,
with that Atomic Man as Gene Hackman or
Nuclear
something.
Man sounds like Gene Hackman.
I saw A League of Their Own the other day doing a little research that didn't turn out so well. And at the end, this old lady's got Gina Davis's voice. It's like the worst version of that. And it's just like everyone else like, hello. And she's like, hi, everybody. I'm Gina Davis. I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
And so the last line that Emilio Estevez has in this movie, well, first to like Gina Davis, Rene Russo is like, oh my God, you are Emilio Estevez? And he brings up the whole like nibble my ear thing again. Mm-hmm. And she's like, oh, clever dog. And then he just goes,
buckle up. Let's see what this baby will do.
And that's the last line of the movie.
You think Rene Russo is then like, okay, a lot has happened since you died. first off, never say that again. And
buckle up,
Rene Russo.
Where we're going, we don't need roads.
This is pretty great. The DP of this movie, Amer Makri, He's this Iranian cinematographer who's was asked to be taken off this movie, which good for this guy. But I just wanted to list off the credentials for this fella because it's pretty intense. He's got under his belt since shooting this movie, or some of them are before, Blue Steel with Jamie Lee Curtis, Pacific Heights with Michael Keaton, Whore, Ken Russell's Whore.
Wow, yeah.
He shot that. Then Free Jack. Then it starts going up from here. The Joy Luck Club, Coyote Ugly, Don't Say a Word, The Salton Sea, Bad Boys 2, Taking Lives, Lord of War with Nicolas Cage, National Treasure Book of Secrets with Nicolas Cage, Vantage Point, Fast and Furious, Transformers Dark of the Moon, Season of the Witch with Nicolas Cage, and Man of Steel.
So he's got like a 2.3 average, I guess, out of 5 stars.
Now you see, Hollywood is the ladder. You know, you got to start at the bottom, and you know, you start with your whore, you go up to a Free Jack, and then eventually you can maybe get to a Man of Steel.
And speaking of hilarious credits, director Jeff Murphy of this film did Under Siege 2, Dark Territory, and Young Guns 2.
Ooh,
that is Emilio. All right.
Working again with Emilio. Hey, Emilio. Ah, and that's Free Jack. I mean, Jesus Lord, what a nothing movie disguised as a sci-fi actioneer. Like, you watch this trailer, you're like, okay, yeah, Free Jack. I'll sit down and watch this. Get ready for really boring car chases.
Yeah, it's kind of I wouldn't recommend this movie. I think
that's where I was going. Yeah, yeah.
It's a shame because it's kind of my sweet spot. Like, this is a thing, aside from people who have to wear capes, is like a thing, the kind of movie that I like to watch. It's like, you know, futuristic dystopia, blah, 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 overly complicated. You know, these kinds of, you know, your virtuosities I'll watch.
Oof. Yeah, that's a real stinker. A stay tuned.
But yeah, there's nothing here.
I actually would recommend it lightly just because I'm a real sucker for stupid stuff because I'm stupid about, like, 2009 happened. And Free Jack didn't, so I like watching it just to giggle at it. Like, oh, like it's adorable that they thought there'd be lasers.
Cute.
I think there's a certain degree of seeing is believing with this title, but you know, if you get something else better to do, you know, put your shoes on, go outside.
I mean, I don't think I would recommend it in any kind of strong capacity. I would say, if you want to see Mick Jagger be really terrible at acting, because it hasn't really happened that much. Like, he did a couple of things way before this movie was made, and not really much since, but he's just, I mean, the Rolling Stones are awesome, but he's not an actor. Like, it's just really awkward to watch him in this movie playing a villain. Like, it doesn't work out. Like, sometimes you get, you know, an entertainer and it works out okay. Like, I think Bowie's a pretty competent actor.
Yeah.
Just talking about, like, some you know, like, colleagues and whatnot. I don't know. This movie's totally not worth it.
It's just so weird why he would even do this movie. Like, you'd probably do okay in a movie where he had to play himself. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Like a wacky, like, he has to play a heightened reality of himself as a cameo. I could get behind that.
Yeah, some sort of charming Christmas set English romantic comedy. Mm-hmm.
Wherein he has to go back to high school.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.